Hello, Internet friend. I'm David Revell, and this is Value Side. Today, the Russian-American conflict, part one. Well, part one, how the Cold War began. This month marks the 78th anniversary of what is likely the most impactful political speech of the 20th century. Delivered on March 5, 1946, in Fulton, Missouri, in the heartland of America. The venue was the tiny Westminster College, hardly the place one thinks of for a historic address to the nation. But it all fit to the down-home approach of America's President Harry S. Truman. True to his casual style, Truman extended a personal invitation to the newly retired Prime Minister of Great Britain, Winston Churchill, to speak at the local college. At the bottom of this formal invitation, Truman penned, quote, "This is a wonderful school in my home state. If you come, I will introduce you. Hope you can do it." Now, it's doubtful that Truman or anyone for that matter had any idea what lay in store for them that spring morning when Churchill laid out for America what would be their future. This was no off-the-cuff greeting for the citizens of what is now labeled flyover country. Instead, it was the well-reasoned perspective of someone who was perhaps the most insightful historian of his day, someone who would later write some of the greatest tomes on Western history and would be rewarded with a Nobel Prize. Churchill gladly accepted Truman's invitation and would make the most of this opportunity to inform America of the unfolding conflict between the Soviet Union and the Western democracies. What we would come to know today as the Cold War. Now, in the most significant part of his speech, Churchill famously warns, quote, "From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended across the continent. Behind that line lie all the capitals of the ancient states of Central and Eastern Europe, Warsaw, Berlin, Prague, Vienna, Budapest, Belgrade, Bucharest, and Sofia. All these famous cities and the populations around them lie in what I must call the Soviet sphere, and are all subject to, in one form or another, not only to Soviet influence, but to a very high and, in many cases, increasing measure of control from Moscow." From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic. It's a phrase that would echo in the minds of all of us who were alive during the 1950s and 60s. Churchill had drawn a line from Poland to Italy and pronounced that it was the Iron Curtain between freedom and tyranny. In this, he was truly prescient. For the next 45 years, the old Soviet Union did indeed dominate all of those countries to the east of that line. Unfortunately, Churchill, who died in 1966, would not live to see the fall of the Iron Curtain. Now today, each one of those ancient capitals are free, no longer under the tyrannical dictatorship of the old USSR. In fact, all but Belgrade, the capital of Serbia, have now aligned with the NATO, the principal force of the Western democracies. And as incredible as it would have been for Churchill to believe, today there is no Iron Curtain. Or Soviet Union, for that matter, both dissolved in December of 1991, when the USSR ceased to exist, all of its control over those Eastern European countries also fell apart. Now, beginning in 1992, there was no longer the old Soviet Union. In its place, the emerging Russian Federation retreated to its historic borders, no longer exerting control over other nations and peoples. Today, Russia is a vast country representing 11 time zones. Like many countries of this scope, several minority populations live within its confines. But the dominant ethnic group is Russian, a people sharing a common language, common history, and common culture. How Joseph Stalin erected an impenetrable Iron Curtain. Joseph Stalin was at the pinnacle of power in the Soviet Union, from its founding in the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917 until his death in 1953. Through a series of offices, which initially included a role supporting Vladimir Lenin, then sharing power with Lenin, Trotsky, and Severlov, Stalin proved to be the ultimate political survivor throughout the tumultuous history of the early years of the USSR. As Lenin's health failed, he suffered a severe stroke in 1922, incidentally, it was Stalin who stepped in to become the general secretary of the Communist Party. For the next 30 years, it was Stalin who ruled the USSR with an iron fist. It was Stalin who was at the helm during the First World War, then famine, the Great Depression, World War II, and he was still in power as the Cold War began. Now, he often took the Soviets through major course changes as his view of global policies changed, the outstanding example being his first alliance with Adolf Hitler's Germany. Stalin signed the Molotov-Ribbentrop Agreement in 1939, promising not to go to war with Germany, only to reverse that position years later and become one of the Third Reich's principal enemies later in World War II. However, it was Stalin's actions following the war that would have the most lasting effect upon America. For the Western powers, the years following the war were a time of satisfaction and peace. A great foe, Nazi Germany, had been defeated. The promise of World War I, that was the war to end all wars, had seemingly been achieved. At last, worldwide peace and harmony was here. You see this even in Churchill's speech. While calling out the Soviets for dividing the world, Churchill still speaks wistfully of his friend and, quote, wartime comrade, Marshal Stalin, remembering the days when they fought side by side against a common foe. Now, given what Churchill had endured during the war, his insight into the motivation and actions of the Soviet Union are all the more remarkable. He was the only one expressing such great reservations on the future course of relations between the USSR and the West. The Soviets' ideology overtaken by reality. Now, while the West basked in the sun of newfound prosperity and freedom, as economies were transitioned from wartime to peacetime, it was just the opposite for the Soviet citizens. Stalin understood that his communist state, far from being a utopia on earth, had fallen far behind the free enterprise economies of the West. Germany, after all, was one of the most advanced countries on earth. In spite of the German pre-war depression, consumer goods and luxury items far outdistanced what was available back home in Russia. What was worse, over a million Soviet soldiers had experienced the German lifestyle firsthand as they occupied the country. What was true for the Soviet occupying force was doubly true for those Soviets who were prisoners of war under the Germans. They had lived with the Germans for months, even years, and had seen firsthand the decadent capitalist way of living. Now, Stalin feared that all of these soldiers and POWs may have been infected with that decadent capitalistic lifestyle, so he had them put through filtration camps, a series of interrogations to assure that they were still good communists. In all, more than 2.75 million Soviet soldiers endured this re-indoctrination, with about half forced into the gulag. By the time of Stalin's death in 1953, fully 3% of the population of the USSR were in labor camps, mainly in Siberia. Now, the final years of Joseph Stalin, the times that Winston Churchill was speaking of, are among the most tragic in all of human history. The suffering, death, and deprivation of the Soviet people are unimaginable. Ironically, Stalin likely felt that his economic system, the communist vision of Marx and Lenin, would never equal the free market system of America and Western Europe. So he took what he felt was his only remaining option, utter and complete oppression of his people. If the Soviet system could not provide as much as others, Stalin would simply not allow his citizens to see the Western alternative. His citizens would not learn about freedom. Instead, they would live behind his Iron Curtain. While many in the West saw the Iron Curtain as aimed at them, it was really designed to contain Stalin's own people. Like all tyrants, Stalin knew that his first order of business was the absolute control of the Soviet people. Stay tuned for part 2, coming shortly. And that's today's Value Side. For all of our articles and podcasts, visit valueside.com. I'm David Revell. Value Side is independently written and researched. The views expressed are strictly my own.